Hey, it's Bobby Saget here, and I'm here for you, right? So welcome to this podcast. This is, I love talking to people that I've known over the years and people that I look up to and people that I love. And these are two guys, they have the number one comedy podcast in all of Australia. They've been a media force in Australia and worldwide. For a really long time, and I met him many years ago, which we'll talk about. It's Hamish and Andy, that who is on the show today. I don't know the Queen's English, but yes, it's Hamish Blake and Andy Lee, and Andy and I have hung out. Actually, Hamish couldn't do it. We'll find out why when I was in Australia on a comedy tour, and so this is it. So this is the podcast. You want to do what you do with these things? You subscribe, you know, or you follow. And then you rate and review, do all those things, right? I got to tell you that. You listen to my sponsors because they're well-meaning. And then look at that phone number up there. And you can call that number that's up there and leave a message. And I'll tell you on Twitter, Instagram stories, or Facebook when I'm going to be calling you guys. So I'll call you guys. I really do call people. And I love doing it. And because I feel like I'm, you know, communicating at this insane time in our world. And I'm very thrilled to have these gentlemen on. They are fantastic people. This is a book. I want to get it perfectly right. Do not open this book. Do not open this book. It's a children's book worldwide by Andy Lee. And it is wonderful. It's a kid's book. And Hamish is about to start Lego Masters in Australia because he is a media icon. They both are. And I'm just thrilled that they're on my show today. Yes, it's a show. You know, it's a podcast, but it's a show. I'm on the YouTube. You can look at these handsome gentlemen, and they are good looking and in perfect shape, and they're the kings of Australia, even in quarantine. So with no further ado, here is Hamish and Andy. How are you gentlemen doing? I'm so happy to see you guys.
This is terrific, Bob. Great to see you.
I'm so happy to see you. And I know you're doing this. You're about to go do Lego Masters, right?
Yeah, season three. I'm about to start Lego Masters in Australia.
He's my preferred host. If you're going to line up Will Arnett and Blake, I think it's a Blake victory. It's a Hamish victory, hands down.
But I think there's a guy in Sweden. I think they might have their own. And there's another guy in the UK. But
I did that with America's Funniest Home Videos. There was always somebody.
that is my dream. That's my dream. I mean, Lego Masters, it's a fledgling franchise. It's not at the level. I remember hearing that for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, when it was at its peak, they would have like a convention where all the hosts would come from around the world. And my dream is that Lego Masters gets to that level one day.
So and then you, could, Finn and- you should stack yourselves on each other.
Yeah, just see if our studs fit.
Some of you fit in different ways.
And just throwing out the one guy that's like the fake one that doesn't quite fit.
Or you all know around the world who the worst one is. We know, you know.
Yeah.
Will is awesome. Will Arnett is awesome, but it's a different attitude. You're very up with people. He's got that BoJack Horseman thing going. So it's a more deep, more bassy kind of, okay, here we go.
Yeah. Well, I can sympathize with it though, because you know some of the builds go for 20 hours.
Yeah, so okay, like, here we go.
All right, guys, I understand it. I've been in that world before, and it's a big accomplishment to have all the bells and whistles going. But you know how to do all this because you guys are media giants.
That's kind.
That's very kind.
I already did the intro. I did the intro and said you're the number one comedy podcast, not just in Australia. You're around the whole damn world, and you are beloved. And I knew of you. And then years ago, you asked me so graciously to be on your show.
Mm. We do trace it back to that, our success.
That's where we got real hockey stick growth. Yeah. That's the knee of the curve.
Yeah.
The Gangaroos. That's right. Yeah.
2006, we trace back to meeting Bob Saget. Analysts will sit there and go, there are other factors, but we don't think so.
No, there's the Saget factor. There's some hardcore maths you could do on it to nail that point. But yeah, when we filmed a sketch in LA, which was probably a little bit almost borderline, well, I'm not going to say racist of us, but just to go, well, we're Australians going to LA. What do we know about LA? Gangs.
Yeah.
And so at the same way that, you know, you probably get Americans coming here going, okay, well, we're going to try and shear a sheep and kick a footy and just drink a lot of beer. It was like when The Simpsons did that Australian episode, everyone in Australia was like,
very offended.
Yeah. So we were just in the same place, lazy stereotypes of going Los Angeles equals gangs. And we tried to start an Australian gang in LA, I guess, like
wasn't affiliated.
Really? No, we were like independent and we were mostly about good vibes too. So we
had little
like,
scarves on. It was very we pleasant.
We were the gangaroos and we needed a celebrity gang.
And this was the thing. You'd do that. You'd do a little thing.
Do a little pause.
Yeah, a lot of people have fist pumps. A lot of people have, you know, very complicated.
True. We were COVID safe before it was a thing. We were the only like non-skin touching gang sign, gang shake.
Yep.
Now, what other, you heard about COVID, right? I'm sorry, I'm making a COVID joke.
We read a little bit about that.
You guys froze while you were laughing. That was upsetting to me. I was like, oh no, this is so upsetting. Yeah, it ain't no fun. We got to solve this. I think it'll come out of Australia. You got scientists working, right?
Well, we've taken a very different approach, and I don't think a lot of Americans would love our approach here in Australia.
Yeah, it's pretty split over here, which I don't get. I don't understand.
But ours, we've had very, very heavy lockdown. Right. You pretty much, you can't really go anywhere. We've had a curfew. I mean, land of the free, they're not going for curfews.
Yeah, so. Curfews is a strange thing, especially in Melbourne where we live. It's like... I mean, I've got two little kids, so I didn't even know there was a curfew in place. So, like, I haven't needed to be out past 9 o'clock for years.
I know. In fact, when I was there and Andy and I hung out on my birthday, one of the favorite nights I like to overly talk about, but I was at the Crown Plaza and we ended up in Nobu and he bought me 9 chocolate martinis or something. And then we kept going bar hopping. And
you love this. We went to Boutique. I mean, imagine
that's a flashback from our younger years.
Yeah.
And I was that's the one with the bridge across it inside.
Oh yeah, we went somewhere else with a bridge. I don't know where that was.
Jeez. And I was looking for someone that I knew that was Australian, if you recall. I was always I don't know why I thought I would like Waldo. Where's Waldo? I was looking for Carmen Santiago. I don't know what I was doing.
I mean, I go to a lot of places with bridges across them, but it's across like a ball pit or like a very small fan. I go to a lot of adventure playgrounds now.
Right. It's like Zelda or Indiana Jones. It's like fire lava. But if I recall, Hamish, you really upset me because I wanted you to go out too, but you had that excuse of I have a new baby. And it was really
very fresh.
I think from memory, it was like first week of having a baby.
it was fresh.
He feels bad. And I went, oh, he shouldn't feel bad. He has a kid, but he's cock blocking me. That kid is cock blocking me.
He did. That was his first, one of his first achievements on planet Earth. I'm going to tell him when he grows up, I'm like, and you cock block Bob Sanger. And this is the first before you talked, before you'd even done like double digit amount of poos.
Yeah.
You cock block Bob Sanger. You know, in coffee places, hey, you need to get like a clip. A stamp for like 10, you know, you get 10 coffees, you get one free.
A loyalty card, yeah.
The loyalty card. If I remember those days correctly, yeah, you need to get about 150 stamps from spending a night at home before you get your first night
to
out.
To your wife.
To my wife. Yeah, so yeah. I was like 6 stamps in. There was no way I was exchanging it for a night
out. I totally know. I have 3 daughters. So it was life stopped for 10 years. And then it doesn't matter. You love them and then you drive them. And then now they can't go anywhere. It's safer than they will ever be.
Yeah, that must be a relief. Is it a relief a little bit to be like, oh, well, you don't have as many sleepless nights as a dad worrying about what they're doing?
When they get older, you will be concerned when they're teenagers. How old are your kids now?
6 and 3.
Oh, that's so cute. You don't have nothing to worry about, but you will.
Oh, totally. Compared to like, you know, because lockdown for us, because we've been in a pretty like can't leave the house, can't leave a 5 kilometer radius of your house in Melbourne. That's been quite cute because I'm in jail with these cute little housemates.
Yeah.
And, well, that's fun. But then you've got other friends who have like teenage kids and it doesn't seem like it's as cute.
You're worried about them. And then there's stuff that happens in Melbourne's a mecca. You know, it's a real city. So the kids are like, I love Melbourne. I mean, I could live in Melbourne. Not now. I'm not allowed to. Leave.
No one can. You can't even live in Melbourne if you're from Sydney at the moment.
See, so that's you're smart. That's just smart. And we've got people here that are just, I mean, they're coughing in each other's mouths and pretending. And then look what happens. You know, look what happens. It's tragic.
If you If you were to come to Australia, though, at the moment, you have to do 2 weeks mandatory hotel quarantine. So right. The government and the military, they kind of escort everybody in that's arriving.
Then we make you make sneakers for 2 weeks. That's just a test if we've controlled you enough. Then we put you to work in the fields. Then you pick up trash for 2 weeks. Then you do number plates. And after that, you can come you've done 10 weeks of work. We'll let you come in.
I had no idea there were like sweat lodges.
Then we get you making like little koala fur wallets. Yeah. You do that for 2 weeks. And then
it's a way of just keeping our economy going.
We're fine. Yeah, there's no virus here. But we're just tricking everyone into forced labor. But
it's actually a good time to bring the gangaroos back, because the gangaroos they could do whatever they want. They don't know people, from quarantine, because they're a gang.
That's true. And people are looking for sort of community and fun times and all the benefits a gang gives you. Bob, this is a big step for you though, getting us on, because you know, very nice. Your intro to us was extremely nice, and that's very flattering. But we know, let's be honest, this is a tough. So usually the aim of a podcast is for the host to get someone that's more famous than them.
Yeah.
And you, is a tough sell. This is a tough sell for you, for your regular fans to be like, all right, Bob, I'll sit with you for a bit. These guys better be good.
No, I ask you, I want you to do as long as you can, but I know you got to do stuff, but I'll do forever. I've set this thing for 2 hours. I don't care. I mean, you know, so it's the opposite. I'm fanboying out. When I first saw you guys, I just love the positiveness of what your comedy is and what you do. You output so much for so many years. I mean, you're real special, and we know who's not, the evil bastards that have success, and then the people that are the best comedians die too young. And you guys you're doing what needs to be done, and the whole world will probably following you and listening to you finally. I mean, I think I'm going to do everything I can. The rest of my life, I'm not spending on my career. I'm basically going to make you the biggest thing in the U.S. I don't care about myself anymore. I don't give a shit. I got everything I need.
This is a pitch to be our manager. I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. At a time where celebrity endorsements are really important across the globe, the fact that you've chosen us I really appreciate that.
You guys, the most successful and probably wealthiest people in media in Australia, which is not a small country. It is a place where everybody says, oh, if U.S. doesn't work out, I'll just go to Australia. Yeah. And
we recommend that tactic too. Like, we've had several points in our career where, you know, people have said, you know, do you want to go to America? This is the time.
Do you
want to
work in the UK?
Like, yeah, of course.
It's pretty fun here. I feel like we're running like a fairly successful hamburger joint in a great beachside town.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you're like, you could go to the city and you could franchise it and you could have a lot of stress and live in New York or LA and run the hamburger chain. But I don't know, it seems pretty fun running the hamburger joint in the beachside town. Yeah.
Well, you had a premonition, because the world is upside down and it is changed from what we're going through now. So it doesn't matter where we are, except your background is gorgeous. Are you in a hospital hiding in a room?
Yeah.
Those look like cupboards in a hospital. You can just put your stuff in here for 3 weeks.
That's my cupboard.
This is where all the people that never checked out just leave their sensible brown shoes, as you can see.
But I'm just glad a human head is not in there like American Psycho. That would be upsetting.
a Top Gun Maverick helmet. This is the costume cupboard that you're looking at at the moment. Props. This is props and costumes.
Because you guys have done crazy, crazy stuff.
Know what? It's so funny you mentioned this, Bob, because I don't know if you've upgraded. I don't know if you're an iPhone man or an Android man. But
I'm an iPhone guy, but I like Androids as a partner.
Yeah, this is not a paid endorsement from Tim Cook. But with the new iOS on iPhone, like, it brings up the memories at the top of your phone, and you can have that thing each day. And today, for some reason, it was a new style. It had like face detected between Andy and me. It was sort of like, so I sometimes click onto the photo and it takes you to the album it's taken them from.
Right.
And it was a face detection thing. It was just me and Andy of like selfies over the years.
Oh dear.
But we often, you know, have an argument that it's just like, it just looks like a Bart and Milhouse photo album, because
I'm
just
convinced I'm not Milhouse.
I feel like Andy is Milhouse because he's injured himself a few more times. But it was, you know, there was some classic ones in there. It was us in the blimp. We did one radio show where we just hovered a blimp above Melbourne and broadcast the show from the blimp.
So we broadcast live from a blimp, Bob, and we encouraged everybody listening live, if you're, you know, concerned about what a neighbor's building
Yeah, we did a bit of like, I guess it was pre-drone days, wasn't it? It was sort of like very, very obvious government surveillance. Yeah. You can see
and literally just Google track record of blimps. You know, it's not always great.
Yeah, exactly. You can see why, like, the Marines don't use them in Afghanistan or whatever. Like, they're a pretty slow-moving, easy target.
And
drones are definitely a more useful tool for the military.
The wind is a problem if you want to go anywhere fast. So someone would call up live on the radio and say, I'm in a suburb of Melbourne. You know, say, I'm in St Kilda. My next door neighbor, we think he's building a pool that's illegal. Can you hover across and let me know? And we'd like set the trajectory for St Kilda, this suburb, but realized that we're only going to get there about 30 minutes time. So we had to play a few songs, do a bit of padding, and then get there and then describe to this guy's neighbor live what his house is doing.
Essentially,
probably illegal.
Essentially, we're in, you're grabbed to a bunch of helium with a dustbuster shooting at the back of you to try and like zip across Melbourne at 2 or 3 miles an hour.
And there's always a guy on the crew that wants to light a cigarette. It's like, we're all going to die.
Are so impractical. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you take this one, because I know in America they've got like, is it the Oscar Mayer Wiener blimp and the Goodyear blimp?
The Goodyear blimp. I've never seen the Wiener blimp, but, you know, it sounds fun.
Was it the Oscar Mayer Wiener Mobile? Maybe it was the
Wiener Mobile. You don't want to see it. A wiener that big in the air would kind of diminish my any prowess sexually I could ever have again.
It's a heck of a shadow to cast across the
men. Oh, my grandmother.
But the Goodyear blimp. But if you take advertising out of the mix, there is no reason to have a blimp.
But
anymore.
Am I right?
This one was an appliance.
Well, the Hindenburg should have been the end of them.
That was a bad. That was a bad.
That's not. And Led Zeppelin doesn't even look good on the cover of that. You know, it's dangerous.
I was in Chicago and they do a, it sounds really boring, but they do, but it was great. It was like they do a architectural tour, right? Yeah. And convincing my mates to go on this architecture tour with me was very difficult when you're on a golf trip with buds, like come on this trip. But they were saying that most buildings, and I'm not sure the era, it could have been the 20s, had blimp poles attached to the top because they thought blimps were going to be one of the major.
So like where you tether your blimp.
Tether your blimps. So basically
I tethered my blimp. My wife's out of town. I tethered my blimp this morning. It's really tethered.
I think it's deflated.
It's in tatters. Yeah, it's crying. It's got this
like
one crying
Hindenburg.
Eye. It is. It's very much. That's how it ended. It was just an explosion.
A lot of people screaming other humanity from next door.
Yeah, actually, it was actually screaming. I'd never heard it talk before. Humanity!
You weren't an architect of any worth if you weren't putting a blimp pole at the top of your building.
Which you know, I live in this country, in America, and I have never known this in my life because we don't know anything. we don't know our own history because we're confused about it now. And it's sad because a lot of bad things happen to all of our countries. I mean, humanity doesn't, fail upward is what happens. And that's what we're doing right now. We're really pushing a giant boulder up a hill for all kinds of stuff. And hell, you guys were built on that, you know. I saw the last wave, you know.
But it has forced us, you know, Australia is not without a lot of its own issues
not
as well.
All.
So I think we often hear from our American friends like, oh, you're doing so well down there. We're like, we've got things we're proud of, but we've also got a lot of history that we're not very proud of at all.
There's horrible history in Australia. But we never built blimp poles. So at least there's a small
giant buildings, but when I toured there, I got to go back. I really want to go back I'll wait till COVID is over. But
unless you don't want to do the hotel quarantine thing, but you are beloved, Bob. I mean, you should come back.
I should
back
point
anytime.
Out, though, you don't get to choose your hotel, Bob.
Yes, it's a lucky dip.
It's a lucky dip. So
that's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you come out.
Oh, and I'm a bitch. So I've got to wait till it's all over. Yeah, I'm just spoiled.
You could be in a motel. Yeah. And that's.
It is
you just
the
have
worst.
To handle that.
It is the worst gamble I reckon you can take. Yeah. Suddenly you are in the tiny box with zero light, or you could be in a suite at one of the most great hotels going around.
My sister's brother, my brother-in-law, just came to the country yesterday and we're all waiting on bated breath, like, what hotel did you get? What hotel did you get? He landed in Sydney, got the Park Hyatt.
Oh, yes.
That's how you roll. That's what that's I would
you,
be doing.
That's where you start coughing a little bit and go, I reckon I need 3 weeks, to be honest. I think we just really make sure I don't have it.
But you can't get the room service the same. A lot, and there's no mini bar stuff. Nothing's in any of the hotels, I would imagine.
No, but that's you can get food delivery. You can get food okay. delivery, food and alcohol delivery.
That's good. And if you touch the cardboard fast enough, the droplets are still on it from the guy that brought it. But when in Sydney, it was the Four Seasons I stayed at, but then they tell me to stay by the place under the bridge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Park Hyatt.
That's the Park Hyatt. Yeah. And I was worried I was going to get some fungus from the water, you know, that it has some botulism or something.
Fairly clean, yeah, though, the harbour. I mean, it does wash out to the sea. So we're the harbour's pretty clean. Mm. Melbourne, we've got a river running through Melbourne that's brown that a lot of people think is not clean.
It isn't. And Jim Courier jumped in it after winning the Australian Open.
That was his move. He was like, if I win the Australian Open, I'm jumping in the Yarra. We're like, the height of your career, is it really smart to go out like that?
You think there'd be a collective cheer, but I think it was a gasp as he went in because it's not the cleanest of rivers.
It was like someone going, if I win the US Open, I'm going to drink a gallon out of the East River.
Yeah.
Someone going, oh, maybe just have a sip and see how you go.
How did he survive that? Did he have a fungus? Did he get sick?
He did not get sick, but he...
He never won another Open.
No, he did. He won it 2 years later and did the same thing.
Okay, there you go. It gave him superpowers.
I'm gonna win something and jump in a septic tank. Now, I have a question. Andy, I got to cut you off because you have Do Not Open This Book, and I'm going to be promoting it a lot because it's all I care about is your career. I'm telling you, this is all I'm going to focus on.
This is a huge bounce for Andy. This is unprecedented.
Do Not Open This Book is a kid's book, and you wrote it for Hamish's kids, apparently.
Well, I wrote actually for my nephews, but it's probably a better story for the podcast if I say I wrote it for Hamish and his kids.
I think it'd be a good thing as your publicist now, I think, and manager.
We're going to twist this a little bit.
I think you wrote it for his kids. And
you're right. And they were sick at the time, and then reading it cheered them up and got them, and made them going again.
Much better. And then they jumped in brown water.
It's kind of you to bring it up, but it's not overly important. It's great that it's being released in the States. I do know in this book is out.
And there's lots, too. There's many books.
There's many books.
So tell me the context of it. So,
well, I basically wrote a single book for my nephew and our friend, but my mate from high school, he's a book publisher, and they make up test books all the time. And I said, can you just publish, or you can just make up one of these books to give to my nephew for his first birthday. And then he said, no, we should publish this. And I said, no, we argued for 3 months or so. And then he convinced me to. And I thought that was great. Now, the thing was, I said that I'd give proceeds to George, my nephew. I was like, yeah, I'll give you the profits because I didn't think it'd go well. Now it's in 35 languages and sold over 1 million copies. So I've had to change the deal with my sister.
Kid's got 5 beach houses. He's killing it.
But Hamish and I have actually released a book at the moment. So
True.
What is that book? I didn't know about that.
Andy's firing on many literary fronts. I see here on his desk, he's writing a bit of erotic fiction as well. So he's hitting every genre.
If you were to purchase one of them, I mean, the kids' book's great, but our Power Moves book at the moment.
Well, this is a book that came up on the podcast. It's been sort of 2 years in the running, but it sort of started organically on our podcast, but we thought, can we make a definitive list of all the power moves in the world? Now,
these are like, when we say power moves, these are things that will give you the upper hand in social situations.
Anything. Okay. Sometimes giving you the upper hand, or sometimes ways to deflate someone that is attempting to gain the upper hand.
Yeah,
it's the idea like pow, like bam. Is it like that?
For example, if someone's monopolizing the conversation, being a bit of an alpha, trying to talk themselves up, trying to attract a lot of the limelight, you can interrupt them and say, "Sorry, have you been crying?" And there's not a lot you can do to come back from that. And that's a great power move.
It's a great power move. So we've collected the hundred greatest power moves.
Yep. So people have been submitting these in for years, and we've been.
This is fantastic because it's psychological and it's smart.
Yeah. And at the start, we said, look, there's two types of moves. There's sort of legend moves where you're doing something amazing and you're becoming a bit of a legend and you're helping people. Or there's asshole moves where you're really cutting someone down who's attempting to gain more notoriety for themselves than you think they should have.
Yeah.
And the more we got into it, the we realized about 98% of them are asshole moves. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I would do. My title would be Tai Chi an asshole, or how to, the Zen of asshole embarrassment. I don't know, but I would have the word asshole, but we would have asterisks in it,
which is double downing
on the ass.
That is very popular now in book titles to put a swear word on the front.
So we basically put out our own power moves originally, and people then started submitting them for our podcast. And we love our listeners, and they basically make the podcast what it is. But they kept suggesting different power moves.
Like another great one. I mean, they're just sort of floating back into my head because we've just sort of been through the final proof of the book. Like if somebody accidentally drops their keys or their phone or something, you just immediately yell as loud as you can, "Pick that up." And they have to, because it's their keys and phone. There's another similar one if you're walking down the street and there's dog shit.
Yeah.
Was the power move there just say,
"Don't step in that."
Don't step in that this time. So it sort of makes it look like
That some of them are like you would yell at someone.
Yes, to get everyone's attention.
Some of them are just quiet. They're just quiet.
I've got a great one for just a bit more quiet. If you're out with a mate and the waitress at a cafe and the waitress is quite acute, as soon as your mate orders, say, "Why are you using a lower voice?"
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Or you could. I would go with more. Have the sores cleared up.
Yeah. That's a power move. That's a great power move.
We had a great one that we enjoyed testing out for a little while too in real life, where if you're ever hosting an event or whatever, and you get to introduce somebody who has a much higher status than you. Somebody saw this happen in Australia when Arnold Schwarzenegger was in Australia and he was out like promoting the Arnie Games, and the owner of a local chain of gyms here got to sort of, do the preamble and introduce him on stage as the MC. If you're ever introducing someone as a higher status, always introduce them as "my man," because it really makes it look like you have a great personal relationship with them. So
oh my God.
Like that just owns a gym. Here he is, "my man, Arnold Schwarzenegger."
And that is a triple take from him. Like, who are you talking to?
I don't know this guy. It's a great one. Oh, another great one, if you really want to get the other hand, is now give him a warm welcome. He's a bit nervous. Here he is. My man.
Yeah, if you say he's a bit nervous before introducing someone,
it makes it look like you have more confidence on stage than that person.
Actually, the thing you could do if the person's an asshole star, you could go, this man needs no introduction. Yeah. And then he just doesn't know. Hopefully someone can hit a music cue. He just comes, you don't say his name.
I have had to do that before at an event with David Campbell.
Yes.
Hold that. We're going to take a quick break. Watch how I do this, because I have sponsors that do things and they shave you or they help you with money. This pound move sounds to me like that should go around the world and become a trend thing. That's really, really smart. And that's what I love about you guys, is you've always done that. And everybody's asked you, you don't want to answer it, but how did you meet? Did you know each other from school?
Yeah, we went to a college, or what we call university, which was rare.
We call that too.
Yeah. I'm bilingual. I can do the American and the Australian. It's incredible.
It is amazing. We call it school.
Big boy school.
But Hamish and I thought it was quite strange because neither of us went very often.
It was rare. I actually knew of Andy much earlier. I knew of him sort of in like what would be junior school for you guys. And I was sort of keeping tabs on him, but he wasn't ready. And he wasn't ready. And I was just like,
wasn't ready to be your friend?
Just wasn't ready. And I'd sort of like cruise past his school and go, okay, that's the kind of thing he's up to now. He's getting there.
That's your first power move. That's your very first.
And then 9 years later, when we were 19 at university, I went, all right, let's do this. Went up, I've been watching you for a little while. I like what I see. I'm convinced I'd like to formalize this. Let's do it.
You've risen to the top. I'm going to skim you off and get you away from the indigence you've been hanging with.
We went and just started making each other laugh. And that's, Hamish was doing commerce science, so he was going to be a business scientist.
Probably, I'd probably be selling a COVID vaccine right now if I hadn't been distracted.
Yeah,
you could have cured humanity, but instead you decided to go up in the Hindenburg.
We got the Milhouse Bart scrapbook.
Yeah, and I was doing some business stuff as well, not well, but
neither of us are doing it very well.
What kind of business, Andy? Was it legal?
I was it was risky.
Yeah.
Oh.
Risky business. Yeah.
Did you have to make fake IDs? That's all I want to know.
We have done that before, Hamish and I. Yeah. Because we booked we both went to Hawaii separately though, not realizing that the drinking age is 21. And when you're 20 and you've
especially booked, coming from Australia where the drinking age is like 21 months.
Yeah. So when you've booked that flight for your first exciting trip and you on a non-refundable flight, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to a place where I'm not allowed to have a drink, even though I've been drinking for 2 years legally in Australia. So that was when the fake IDs came out.
Well, I know that God, I had a good time with you. I mean, that was like a very memorable night. I'm sorry, Hamish, that your kids.
No, I'm very, very proud, and it gives me a warm feeling to know you guys had such a wonderful.
What I would like to know, though, Bob, is like you, because the show was great. The show was actually heaps better than I expected.
And you told me that, which meant I loved my show in Melbourne.
It was really funny. It was really great.
Thank you.
It was super broad and accessible, and everyone loved it. Because we don't know Bob Saget, the comedian, as strong as we do now. But at the time,
I had another special or two happen, I think.
But the Bob Saget, the comedian, wasn't as well known, nearly as well known as Bob Saget, the actor, in Australia. So how were you feeling? I wondered that when you came out. Like, it obviously sold out, but which would have been a relief, or did you think that was always going to happen? How are you feeling when you came out to Australia?
I was very excited, but I'll tell you my media experience. They put me on, who's that giant morning DJ gentleman, radio personality?
Oh, Kyle Sanderland?
Exactly. So he throws me under a bus. He threw me under the bus. What he did was, I get there, I have slept till that morning, and then because I just got off the plane the night before, and then it wasn't as bad as the John Stamos experience when he got there and he was thrown under the bus. And, you know, you need an extra day before you start any press. That's kind of how it should go.
Yeah, it's a good rule.
And this has happened to other people, I know for a fact, because it's fun. It's a fun hazing to do to someone. Especially, oh, that's Bob Saget.
I even someone like you, we love Bob. I feel bad publicly saying, all right, yeah, like, you know, honestly, you should take an extra day because it is fun for Australians to see Americans get here and try and do press.
Oh, my God, I floppity flopped. Then I did press all day in the same studio and didn't know that what they do is your afternoon show, you know, Good Day Australia, Good Afternoon, and David Campbell's show. And I got to know all the different hosts, but it's in the same studio and they put a different flat behind you. They put it across the way and it's the same crew.
Yeah.
And they're 14 hours. And
that's
smells
the Australian
like,
TV industry. We were basically just running out of the basement.
Yeah. And they were all like this. I went, oh, you're still here. Yeah. We're still here. Good to see you again. I had a lovely time. There wasn't anyone that Joe Hildebrand and people that I follow, I'm saying his name right, aren't I?
You are, yeah.
And people that I just thought, well, they're smart, they're entertaining people, they're media people. And it meant a lot to me, actually. And I followed them on Twitter and still do. And I'll be going to bed because I'm a comedian at heart. So 2 a.m, I'm trying to go to bed and you guys are waking up. And then I'll see you. Oh, Joe said something interesting, and I'll give it a heart, and then he tweets back, oh, my God, Bob Saget just liked my tweet.
I mean, Bob, you experienced, I think, you know, the love that we have for a Bob Saget. The reason we love having people like you at is because it is a long way. We get that it's a long way for Americans to come. It's not really a long way for us to travel to America because we're far away from everything, so we're used to traveling. But we do see, you know, proportionately fewer people come to our shores. But when somebody turns up and they're clearly there to have a great time and
to entertain and see if I could translate. I know how to do it now. Like Melbourne, Sydney was difficult for me because I didn't know that I was part of a comedy festival. And yeah. then I was on right before Will Anderson.
Yeah,
who's,
right.
Who's really great. And
killer.
He, amazing. And I had a 7 o'clock show and he had a 9:30 show. And I'm going, I'm not a 7 o'clock show. You know, I'm yeah, R-rated no. show. So,
yeah.
And then to double down, they had Ronnie Chang open for me. And Ronnie at that time had not, he was about to explode into,
yeah.
now he's on The Daily Show here. And I talked to him recently because it's a movie I'm planning to direct and I want him for it. And so I called him and he's so nice and sweet. And he's backstage before the show. He's like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. And Bob, it's such a pleasure. Thank you. It's an honor. And then he goes out and he crushes. He, it is unbelievable. It was like a lion eating the stage. And I'm backstage and Will's talking to me. He goes, yeah, I'm all sold out. And, you know, and I'm like, what? And then the guy's crushing. And I'm like, all right, I know what to do. My first show in Australia ever. And it was good. It wasn't great, you know, but it was good. Yeah. But I went, thanks a lot for setting me up, everybody. You know, yeah. Ronnie Chang, who I can't follow. Let's hear it for him.
They probably couldn't be more of like an ingrained professional Australian comedian sandwich to jump into, especially hot off the plane to try and attempt that gear change.
But it's insane.
And that's where bands have the upper hand because bands go straight up to the sound and lighting guy and go, no lights for these guys.
Right. Cut Chang's mic.
And then they go, and can you just drop them down a little bit? Just make a bit softer. And there's all these tricks that bands do to make sure that their support act can't be as dazzling.
I tried. I didn't try to do anything because I don't like to hurt anybody. I'm very much a empowerer for all comedy and all performers. But I did go, after I heard the walls vibrating from laughter and applause, I did say, how long has he been on? You know, that's, I did one of just one.
Let's best not to overexpose this kid to too much, or, you know, we want him to have a long career. Let's not freak him out. Yeah, I suppose the ultimate power move, rather than a mic drop at the end of a set where you're doing a night of stand-up, is the mic take, to just unplug it and take the mic with you.
that is it. Or if you're using the same mic, which I don't normally do, especially now you don't, they give you a brand new mic if you're going to perform.
Yeah, of course.
I'll tell you a story about that in a moment. But I will tell you that, well, you could turn the mic off or take out the batteries. You know, you could, that'd be a power move. You know, have
a condom
set
over the top so no one can, no audience.
I had a comedian once, the worst thing he could say to a performer on, and I don't know if you've ever seen this before, and he meant it. He went, follow that.
Jeez.
We've never heard from him again. That was a different
okay,
situation.
That's good.
But I do want to share with you that after I went Sydney, next night, I had one night free in Melbourne, which was my birthday in the United States. But my birthday in Australia was the next night after the show. So I had two birthdays.
Get the
and Live Nation was so wonderful. And I got this amazing thing in my room with real good wine and cigars and pâtés. And I went, wow, how did Live Nation know this? And then my daughters called me and said, did you get what we delivered? And I had already thanked Live Nation. But it was for my kids because they love their dad and they know I like what I like. And then
that's the opposite of quarantine at the moment in hotels. You do not get a pack of cigars from the government. Okay? Welcome to Australia. Enjoy your quarantine.
And they were Cuban. So, and then after that, I went to Brisbane. And I had a nice show. I enjoyed it there. It's more residential type of a place is how I felt. And then they said, oh, you're going to go to Perth. I went, okay. I said, how far is it? Oh, just a flight. And they didn't tell me it's gone New York to Hawaii.
In the same way that the Apollo missions were just a flight.
Exactly.
It's quite a flight.
And the first class was a coach seat with a half of a seat between the other coach seat.
Oh, yeah. They do that here. They pretend that it's not far.
Well, sorry, we mean it's the first section that you will pass on the plane, not to be confused with first class.
Yes.
That just happens to be the first thing you'll pass after the door.
First row.
It's the first thing after the door.
First pass.
Yeah,
that's what they should call.
Sorry, we're in first part, not first class.
It's a complete airline pal move.
It really is. I remember when I was little, when I was younger, I flew, like, the first trip I ever took overseas, I was like 18, and I flew from Sydney to Vancouver. I went like backpacking.
That's
and the airline, the ticket was $950, which is like this is like in 99 or 2000.
Right.
And it was the it was on an airline called Canada 3000, who I've never heard of before. I honestly think I was on their only flight.
Sounds like a vampire movie that's just like just got a lower exchange rate.
It honestly was like someone had like a real low level. Like I know for like a Richard Branson or someone, it's fun to start an airline and you can do that as a billionaire. But this felt like someone that had maybe just a few million dollars.
Yes.
And wanted to be a billionaire. I was like, I'm going to start an airline, even if it's one plane. And we're calling it Canada 3000. It's going to sound futuristic.
And I always think that 3000 is your best 1,000 to choose. Mm. I think
2000 has lost all its sheen.
Yeah.
Maybe we remember it.
2000, we got to write it off.
Yeah, we remember But yeah, like Andre 3000, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is
good. That guy's future proofed.
But where is Outkast when you need them? You know?
Exactly.
I'd heard that the first time I'd ever flown internationally, I was like, I heard you can get upgrades if you like charm someone at the desk or you charm a flight attendant or whatever. But this plane, it was like kind of like a troop transport. Cause I got on and I said, I wonder if there's any seats free in first class. And they went, it's all first class.
Same thing. It's unbelievable.
Gotcha.
No. It's all A class.
It's all
not. I wouldn't say it's.
I suppose with no winner, there can be no loser. It's all the same class. So yeah, well, I understand the difficulty of, you know, the shock of the.
I actually love Perth. I played in the theater there.
It's worth going.
It was amazing. I would have liked to have another day there because it's a small seaside town.
It should be their slogan. It should be perfect. It's worth it because it is. It is worth the journey.
I think every place I went to from those cities, I'm sad that I didn't go to Adelaide.
Yeah.
Awesome. My friend Ben Folds lived there for a long time.
Yeah.
And Ben's wonderful. I mean, he's a very special guy. And Jim Jeffries is always telling me, oh, you've got to play the Opera House. I said, well, I can't follow Ronnie Chang. I don't think I'm going to be playing the Opera House.
You could busk.
If Will Anderson is on, I don't think it's going to happen.
I'm not sure if you know this, Bob, but we did a show called True Story with Hamish and Andy here. And if you were to get the American version of Hamish and Andy, because there are American stars that are going to host our show in America.
No, it really should be you guys. I think this is dumb already. No, I think funny, brilliant people should be international. Truly, I really do believe that.
That's true, but we're pretty chuffed with who they've got. So
we'll take this.
Who do you think, who are the Hamish and Andy of America? If I put that a question.
Well, but no one's friends like you guys are. No one finish each other's sentences like you guys are in Cicapato. It doesn't exist. It has to be organic.
There is a small hint we'll give you that they haven't previously done. They haven't really done much as a duo, but the syncopation is there.
Yeah.
They're friends.
They are.
They're
it's going to be Ed Helms and Randall Park.
Okay. Well, that's understandable.
Who do you think's Ed and who do you think's Randall out of the two of us?
Well, it's Helmsy and Randy. I mean, instead of Hamish and Andy. I mean, that's just the
offer. I think
just did a rebrand, and Ed was like, oh, no, people know me as Ed Helms. I was like, I think you could get Helmsy over the line.
Now, do you guys get the cop? You guys own the brand of the syndication?
Yeah, so we came together with this show. I came up with this show and with a couple of other our mates that make all our TV shows, all friends from university days, but...
Right, yeah, but so, I mean, the one here, do they have to pay you for the
yes,
brand?
Yes, yes, it's our format. It's
Are your names going to be on the credits? It should be.
Yeah, we're executive producers.
Well, then it should say, then why the hell aren't you on the show? Why is
We just wanted to be Helmsy and Randy appear with the permission of Hamish and Andy.
I think it's an... I appreciate the endorsement, Bob, but I think the show is about... hearing everyday people's stories. And so that was really easy one for Hamish and I to do. We've got the podcast and the years of radio experience and people are comfortable coming forth and telling us their normally very embarrassing and personal stories.
Yeah, usually it's and then these people don't really want to be on TV. So the whole crux of these stories is it's the, like, you really shouldn't be telling this on TV because it's often painting them as, it's like the worst day of their life or the most embarrassing day of their life. So yeah, it does help having someone in those seats who are.
Yeah, I understand. So because they familiar. Know you and they're close with you, they will tell you things. I mean, with this podcast, every Thursday I call people. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I have two special guests on Monday and Thursday, but I call people. They leave messages and I call them and they sit around waiting or think I'm going to call them. And I call about half of them or a third of them if I can. And I do a couple of episodes and they tell me stuff like I'm their psychiatrist. I mean,
yeah, wow.
It's really special. So I understand that.
I would guess Americans
Ed Helms is going to be Hamish, right?
I reckon.
Helmsy.
Yeah, Helmsy.
Helmsy, sorry.
I reckon. But look, to be honest, they'll do their own thing. But I do think that Americans will feel, and I know that they are in safe hands, but they'll definitely feel like they're in safer hands.
Oh, just getting to know those guys too. Like, you know, they're just such lovely.
Yeah, they're great people.
Lovely guys. And I think that's the fun of the show.
Like you, they care about people. So the show is about listening just as much as it is about kind of adding jokes and having a
good pal move you could do on them?
Oh, yeah.
We could.
You did a great job with that first pilot.
I'm sure we could fly over and put ourselves in prosthetics and sit down in the chair and tell them tell them a story that goes horribly wrong.
You know, it'd be great if you're on this. Go ahead, sorry.
A great power move could be you did a great job for a first go.
Yeah.
That's great.
Anytime you add that little last little qualifier.
Yeah, good on you for sticking with it. That's good. Good on you.
You should do this again tomorrow.
Yeah. One of the great power moves too, which is anytime you are talking to somebody that has an important high profile job, like let's say Andy's the CEO of, I don't know, like a cereal company or something, but always acts as if it's a big deal. Just a bit of, how's everything going? Still all quiet at your end? Things still quiet at your end?
Another good one is if someone says to you they're a doctor or a brain surgeon, you go, oh, how'd you fall into that?
Right. You know, there's actual people making a movie and they go, when a bad thing happens, you know, big production and $100 million or something, or doesn't matter, $2 million, whatever, it's your movie. People go, hey, it's not brain surgery, you know? I go, no, this is harder than brain surgery because brain surgery, you know, there's only so many ways to cut a brain, you know? And do you think
there's a book you can read that can guarantee you the correct way to do brain surgery.
Brain surgery for dummies.
And there's no book you can read that guarantees you the correct way to make a movie.
And you don't have
exactly.
With brain surgery, you don't have like 1,000 people that are potentially going to fuck it up as well. It's just you and your scalpel.
And Murphy's Law, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think you even have the temptation of craft services. I think it's a very strict, you can't eat until you finish this brain.
It's all about scrubbing and wearing a mask. And a lot of people don't want to do that, so they couldn't be brain surgeons. But what I always say when two brain surgeons are working on somebody, they go, at least we're not making a movie. That's the comedic flip, obviously. I have one more pal move for you, for these gentlemen doing the show here. And that would be, you go the first day and you have short director's chairs, just short little, with the little, you know, the fold-up ones. And you just, you know, put executive producer on the back of each one and just sit like literally in their eye line, just 3 feet right behind where the stage downstage ends, and just sit there just watching them the whole time.
I like that.
Just, really like
it. Just intimidate them with your space.
And in their eye line while they're doing the show, making tons and tons and tons of notes. Then coming over after they finish the episode, coming over and going, look, honestly, I'm just going to say, keep it up. I don't want to overload you, but yeah.
And then they want to see what's on your pad. It's like nothing. You're just drawing like houses, playing hangman.
I also liked you when you said it at the director's chairs. I was thinking perhaps we should bring in slightly more deluxe director's chairs.
And lazy sit boys.
Sit them next to theirs. So it's Ed Helms, Randall Park, and then Hamish Blake, Andy Lee. But ours.
But we get like full lazy boys, like massage chairs, like the ones you see at the airport.
They should be motorized. They should be.
And then during the take. They'll be like, sorry, guys, can we just, for audio, can we have the chairs off? So, no, that we're okay. We'll try and take it out in post.
You're backing up and it beeps when you back up.
We just got off a 14-hour flight.
No, we need to be in our cushy little chair moped. Did you do a movie, you two?
No, we haven't done a movie.
No, we've never done a movie.
Have you written one for us?
You really should do a movie. That would be, like, so great.
Oh, great. That's good news.
All right, done.
Yeah, no, amazing. I mean, you are our manager. I do feel like you're our new manager.
No, you're still young, and you need to do this because you're a worldwide commodity because no one is as smart and just nice and delightful and does an intellectual kind of everyman kind of thing. I mean, people don't.
That's very nice things.
Well, there really aren't that many. There's a few people that do it for that reason, to make people feel good.
I'm fascinated in your career a bit too, Bob. Were you ever were you ever offered a movie or a part that you just went, look, it's not for me, it's not working out at the moment, but
yeah,
in hindsight, look back and go, I would have loved to do that?
I should have done one. Peter Jackson was directing it, and it was a movie
You're
starring
too tall for The Hobbit.
It was a mistake that I didn't do it just to be around him, and Michael J. Fox was the star, and it was a movie, I can't remember the title, but Peter Jackson wanted me to play the judge at the end of the movie, and it was a couple of pages of dialogue, but I would have been in full skeletal makeup.
Wow.
And a lot of prosthetics attached to my head, and I didn't do a lot, and I thought, I'm going to go through 8 hours, you know, for a week.
Yeah.
And then be in this giant scene and be sitting here, and they could just have an extra do it and just have someone do the lines, you know. Yeah. But I think I should have done it just to be around Peter Jackson for a week. I think I would, and Michael, but I wouldn't be like proud and go, hey, Michael, it's Bob Saget under here. I go, Bob, why are you a skeleton judge? Why did you do this? I don't know. I wanted to watch Peter Jackson for a week.
Yeah, you never want that question on a set, do you? Why did you do this?
Yeah, that's a pal.
We had that experience because there was another big duo called American Rosso in Australia. Another big comedy duo.
Right when we were starting out, that was sort of the guys, like even when we were in high school, we were listening to those guys going, yeah, they're killing it.
And there was this event going on and our management said, hey, look, American Rosso are doing
it. Yeah, they're hosting this and they want you to come and do a spot at this event. It's in Sydney and you have to fly up there and do this. It was called the Jack. It was like Jack Daniels was attempting for like a sponsored thing to like have their own awards where they would give like best rock album out and like best, like, I don't know, coolest car or whatever. Like it was just a kind of a branding exercise for Jack Daniels. But I think we don't have a lot of award shows in Australia. And so it was like sold into us as like, no, these, even though it's only in their second year, these are going to be the cool awards that everyone, you know, it's going to be rad to be at. American Ross are hosting, so you know it's cool.
So yeah, exactly.
You better go.
Based on the endorsement of these other two guys, Merrick and Rosso, we thought, okay, we should definitely go. This would be cool. And we get
put a lot of effort into like, you know, we've got to come up with some stuff for our segments. And you know, we sort of got there. We're like, it wasn't massive. Like were sort of broadcasting on a cable channel. And I don't know, just initially things began to be a little bit less cool than we thought they were going to be.
Until Merrick comes in and goes,
I think halfway through the show,
why the hell are you guys doing this?
Why are you guys doing this show?
And we went, oh, well, it's, you know, like you
well,
guys,
yeah, you know, we're like, well, yeah, I think it's,
You're doing it. And he goes, I'm doing it as a favor for my friend.
Because, my best mate started the awards. He goes, I'd never do this.
Oh, no.
We've learned a valuable lesson here. We really need to assess things on more than who's hosting.
You can't do anything outside your comfort level. That's why I appreciate you doing this. This is huge.
Yeah. Well, we just did it because we figured, if Bob's doing it, it's got to be good.
Right? Bob's doing his name's on it. I just think the world of you guys. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
But if people have made it this far, I'm super impressed. If they didn't know who we were and they were like, that shows a huge degree of loyalty to you, Bob, that they've stuck through.
I'm this is just the beginning of what I'm gonna do for your career. I mean, you're already the kings of your empire, but I think you should go worldwide. There's no reason why you can't. But
we want a segment on Bloomberg about power moves. That's our dream. Cross to the stock exchange, and me and Andy are like, well, we got no stock news for you, but you're obviously interested in business and power. Here's today's power move.
I think the power moves is going to be a game changer. I really do. I'm not kidding.
We'll send you a book, Bob.
I can't wait. I'll promote it on all my virals.
You're our manager.
Wishing you guys and your families a lot of health and safety and all that.
Big love.
Yeah, I might be there to see you before because I want to tour again. I want to bring my wife, Kelly, and you guys will love her. Yeah. Andy, please don't go near her.
We'll sign off on the health forms for you.
Thank you. Please, all NDAs too. Thanks, be man. Well. Thanks so much. I'm so happy.
Oh, we loved it. Thanks, Bob.
Hamish and Andy. They are, if you're not fans of theirs, you will be. If you're listening to this or if you're watching it on the thing, on the YouTube, check out all the stuff they've done over the years. It's amazing the amount of media they have done. They're just great people and funny as hell, as you could tell. And smart, I'm not as smart as them. I actually know that. That's why I'm here for you. Did I give you a pal move? Did I just insult you accidentally? I'm not smart. That's why I'm here for you. That's saying, because I know how smart you are. If you're listening to this, you're smarter than me and you're kind to, I guess you're drawn in by my kindness and that I'm funny once in a while, I guess. Anyway, that's my self-effacing analysis of what I've been doing. I'm so happy that you listen to this. If you made it to this point, you are good people. And Hamish and Andy, you want to check out all their stuff. And you can get this book, which I do not open this book for kids. Andy Lee is a wonderful guy. And Hamish will be in the, that Lego giant thing in Australia. And then their big show with Ed Helms here in the U.S., not them. Anyway... do what you do. You know the whole deal. You subscribe and you listen or you follow. It's free. You know, podcasts are free, I'm told. And then you also rate, review, and subscribe. That's the thing they taught me day one as I still work on the beginning toddler years of my podcast. And I just appreciate you guys. And I'll be calling you, so check out when I post it on Twitter, or Instagram stories, or Facebook when I'll be calling you, and then call that number that's up in the top of the thing, and I'll call a lot of you, as many as I can, and see what you're up to, what you want to talk about. I might come up with subjects sometimes. I don't know. I haven't done it yet. I've still got growing pains. I miss Alan Thicke. Look, everything's just a free associative thing that sometimes doesn't always go positive. So that's how I'm trying to convince myself that I'm not going to edit that out. Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. Hamish and Andy, Google the hell out of them. Subscribe to their stuff. Well, anyway, that's what I'm going to manage them now. Be well, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.